Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
So, welcome to this week's Sunday Roast. It is Sunday, the 28th of June. Basically, he is half done. My name's Kevin Hornsby.
And my name is Charles Archer.
Well, Charles, are you shrinking in the heat or surviving?
It's not too shabby, actually. We had a couple of super hot days. Today is extremely hot, but because you were so much hotter before, it feels cool, almost psychologically. I wouldn't mind one day of just pouring rain and freezing cold. But other than that, yeah, it's summer. It's pleasant. I think I've come to realize in my life, I like spring and I like autumn in the UK. Winter's too cold, summer's too hot. You know, late spring, early autumn, that's the place to be. How about you?
No, you just need that big sunny disc in the sky and then realize that the best parts of the day are the morning, but normally I'm asleep, and the afternoon, evening, which is the best. Indeed. What's been happening in the world? Has Mr. Trump done anything crazy this week, or has it been quiet?
Well, he's always done something crazy every week, but ultimately, I think it's kind of hard to keep track. I think mostly the Strait of Hormuz, is it open? Is it closed? Is it Schrodinger's Strait? Nobody really seems to know anymore. Ultimately, I think it's just been a heat wave across the West, and particularly in Europe and the UK. The market's just been dead, right? Like, there's no liquidity.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. I agree with you. I mean, I've been looking at even just the volumes on the market. The volumes have been next to nothing. Even when you've been putting articles out, the volume has spiked a little bit, but not very much because nobody's reading the bloody stuff.
It's the market makers and the brokers are probably all at the beach. Someone picks up their phone. Hey, can we play some pie? They're like, I'm sorry, I'm in my swimming trunks. Call back next week. It's too hot. I would imagine.
Yeah.
It's too hot. And realistically, like the day traders that provide a lot of the liquidity in the market, they're not trading in this weather. You know, you're not sitting in front of a desktop in an office. It's just not happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Okay, well, let's go straight into our first guest. I mean, again, we have to applaud, you know, another IPO that's coming to the market. It's come from the main market back down to, or should we say back down to? Just onto AIM is Talon Resources. So, let's listen to what they have to say. So we welcome our first guest today on the Sunday Roast, Alex King from Talon Resources. How are you doing, Alex?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks, guys. How are you?
We're good. Obviously, you're in Ontario with muddy boots on and looking at gold right now.
Yeah, if only, actually. That would be a nice place for me to be. I recently got back and had a fantastic time. Nice to get the boots dirty, as you say.
Very good, very good. So I'm going to give you the ask all question. Then just tell us what Talon Resources is intending to do.
So Talon Resources, new gold exploration platform. We had seen that actually there were very few opportunities for exposure into gold exploration globally. Exploration has just been massively overlooked. It's a sector that's been dominated by M&A, very little coming to market, and certainly none of that in London. So that was the niche of the market we were looking to fill. Initially, we're focused on a project called Eagle Lake in Northwest Ontario. We've got a fully funded exploration program that we'll be hitting the ground running and undertaking almost immediately. So really looking forward to demonstrating the potential of that. But our grand ambition is to with appetite, to have a portfolio of these early exploration assets.
Okay, very good. And just to give us an idea, how much did you raise on relisting, really? Because this is a story that has changed over the last period of time. So just give us an idea of what's happening and how is that set up?
So essentially, it was a reverse takeover. So Medcore Investments was a main market shell, which we undertook the reverse takeover. We bought a 90% interest in an outfit called Wedgetail Mining Corp, holds 100% of the ownership of the Eagle Lake project. The other 10% is retained by Gunsyn, another AIM-listed entity exploring for gold in the world. Concurrently with that transaction, we raised another $2 million. To undertake our exploration program on Eagle Lake. So we're fully funded, we're fully permitted, we're ready to go and watch this space.
Okay, so just for details, you raised 2 million at 1.25 pence,
That's right.
and then anyone who's still holding all of their stock after 6 months gets a 3p warrant as well for 2 years.
That's right. So as much as locked in as can be, you know, the certainly the Wedgetail transaction, that's fully locked in. Everybody's taking equity and is coming in as part of the journey.
Okay, very good. Right, I'm going to leave the technical stuff to Charles because he's the expert. Go for it, Charles.
Well, I wouldn't say expert. I'm just a guy with a keyboard most of the time. But yeah, I think the key thing.
Keyboard warrior expert. Well, it's better than me anyway. I don't even have a keyboard.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. You don't have a keyboard. How do you know what? We don't have time for this. Let's talk to Alex. Alex, there's that. While there are, you're right, exploration in general, there's very little gold exploration and not particularly many to choose from in London. There is still quite a number in North America. And I think one of the problems, maybe problems not the right word, but like perception issues that you might come against is what's special about this project compared to others, right? And, you know, I've done the work on this. So I could answer this for you, but I'm not going to. I'll let you take the floor and then I'll interject. Go for it.
Sure. So I think the really nice thing about this project is that although it's in its exploration stage, we've got a really strong historical with some really compelling grades of material that's outcropping at surface. We've got assays up to 204 grams per tonne along one of the targets that was identified in the previous iteration of exploration. But actually, those are not in isolation. You know, the term bonanza grade is chucked around quite a lot. Anything,
I
20,
say, whenever someone says bonanza, a fairy dies, I think it's the German.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, my apologies to the fairy community, but you know, the general, my understanding, the general definition of bonanza would be anything north of 20, 30 grams per ton. And we have got numerous samples across the property of 20, 30, 40, 50, 75 to those, you know, 200 gram per ton samples, but that's all outcropping at surface. So, you know, this is material that we can go back and we can resample quickly. And as we are fully permitted, you know, in terms of generating that news flow and really building that momentum and that value, you know, that's, you know, we're not having to mobilize a drill rig and drill several hundred meters to target that material. It's there at surface. In terms of drilling, it's the property is about 6, 7 kilometers of strike length, and the majority of the historical exploration was undertaken right in the southwest of the property at a place called Fournieri Bay. And there were 26 drill holes that, you know, the 1950s to 1980s, not particularly targeted. Let's just stick a hole down and see what comes up. But none deeper than 150, 155 meters. And, you know, with this kind of Archean greenstone gold, generally the deeper you go, the better these things tend to get. So actually, you know, very few drill holes, only scratching the surface. But actually, some of those drill holes did return some really nice intercepts. I think one highlight was north of 3 meters at 7.5 grams per ton gold. So, you know, with not much forethought apparent in the exploration program back then, this is returning intercepts of some really quite compelling nature. So, you know, for us to go back in, as I said, we can target that high grade material at surface, build that momentum, build our understanding, and we are fully now kitted and capitalized to undertake that 2,000 meters of drilling. So we're really excited about, you know, following that material down and seeing what it does at depth.
Yeah, well, it's a sweet spot, isn't it? Because you have those surface samples. Well, 204 ton is pretty is very decent. You know, a lot of explorers are quite happy with 5 or 10. But you know, grab samples, you know, by their very nature, they're selective, right?
They
But
are, yeah.
having those holes, I know you say 150, 155 meters, 26 holes down, but you're in kind of a sweet spot where you've got a lot of data and a lot of data, but then beneath 150 meters, it's virgin ground.
That's
So
it.
it's both greenfield, but also you've got the data set that you can already feed into the AI.
And actually, not just at depth. So, as I said, the majority of the historical exploration was taken on the southwest corner of the property around a place called Fournieri Bay. And then in 2012, 2013, the properties were held for a short while by an outfit called Cresswell Resources. They're a Canadian listed outfit. And they found this new target that they called Parker Shear. And that's where one of these grab samples came up with 204. And again, it's not just one sample. You know, there were a number of, you know, nicely mineralized that came out of that target. And that's about a kilometer strike from Fournieri Bay. The majority of the property outside of that hasn't been tested outside of, you know, soil sampling and a bit of grab sampling. So there's a huge amount of strike extent as well that's currently underexplored. So what I'm focusing on doing is drilling and trenching around that Fourniery Bay, Parkershire area, because that kilometre of strike, that's a really decent exploration target if you can tie up something coherent between those two areas of the property. And then actually the majority of that strike still remains largely undertested. Other than right in the northeast of the property, right at the end of the Cresswell campaign, they found a target that they called Bjorkman Shear. And that's demonstrably mineralized as well. I think up to 10 grams per ton gold in one of the grab samples. But more interestingly, at that point, there was, I think, off the top of my head, 230 odd grams per ton silver as well.
Yeah,
So, you know, we've got
not too
both
shabby.
ends. No, that's quite a decent sample. So, yeah, at both ends of the property, we've got some really compelling material outcropping at surface.
Sorry, I don't want to interrupt you. Can you different types of mineralization, right? Can you physically see the gold or silver, or is it disseminated?
So the Crestwell campaign notes a number of visible gold samples. So
Yeah.
yes, there is visible gold there. There is a small sulfide component to it, but I think less than 10% sulfide at its peak. So I'm looking forward to seeing some visible gold. It's reported to be there. So
I
you
just
know.
it's exciting, right? Honestly, a lot of people learn the words. But if you read like When the Lions Feed as a child, potentially by Wilbur Smith, and like they see the physical gold scene. When you're drilling, right? Obviously, in the market, you've got to wait for assays to come back. But when you're doing it yourself, if you can physically see it coming out the core, that's what you're
That's
hoping
right.
for, right? Well, the excitement
That's
shoots
right.
up your arm.
Even though we're talking about 204 grams per ton being an astronomically high grade for material, don't forget that in this part of Ontario where you've had the hoe and you've had a very high grade, very large kind of multi-million ounce operations, some of those drill intercepts were coming out at several thousand grams per ton gold. Where the core is structurally composed of gold with other material in it. So that kind of number is not unheard of, by any stretch.
Indeed. And the other thing is kind of, I kind of want to touch on it, is jurisdiction quality, but also district validation.
Absolutely.
So, jurisdiction, I'll say, this is a top five Fraser Institute ranked address. Every ounce of gold that you find is worth more than pretty much anywhere else in the world outside of Western Australia, say. But the district validation is probably, just as important. Just talk about your neighbors a little bit and the capital they're deploying, what kind of resources already exist close by to you.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, in terms of jurisdiction, you're absolutely right. And this is why, we're a new gold exploration platform focused on that North American continent for that very reason. Exploration is risky. Everybody in the game knows that. So, my personal take on it is let's take out the risk where we can. And basing ourselves in those, just like Bonanza, tier one jurisdiction gets thrown around a lot. But as you say, Canada, Ontario, the majority of North America, that's as tier one gets. Really. So yeah, that's our focus. What's interesting actually around, very locally around Eagle Lake, there's a town about 30 kilometers northeast of us called Dryden. This is it's a bona fide, Ontario mining town. It's got the assay labs, it's got the airport, it's got the power, it's got the roads.
Got the people.
It's got the people, exactly. And actually, there's a little kind of microcosm of really intense exploration activity underway in the Dryden area. There are players, Canadian listed outfits such as Dryden Gold, for example. I think the last time I checked, which was about a week ago, their market cap was sitting just under 80 million Canadian dollars. And essentially, they're a pre-resource outfit that has just been tying up claims along these northeast southwest structural corridors that Eagle Lake, sits on one of them. But the real validation comes from looking at their cap table when you see Alamos Gold and Centerra having 10% roughly each of the issued share capital of Dryden. So there is a validation of major players, backing these kind of junior mid-tier explorers in this very local area around Eagle Lake. And they're not in isolation. Kenalan Minerals has got Centerra and Sumitomo, I believe, on their cap table, again, with some pretty major holdings. But actually, it's not only exploration. Just the other side of Dryden from us is the next gold mine in Goliath Complex, which is 2.9 million ounces in pre-production. So, there is a demonstrable pathway from grassroots greenfield exploration through to production in the very local area around Eagle Lake.
I'm probably one of the for people investing at this stage, one of the more important things is if you do hit the mother lode or even something just quite interesting, that's joint venture partners right next door to you. There's people that you can talk to. And you may not be having those conversations now, but it makes life a hell of a lot easier when you're exploring right next door to people that are already sinking money into building plants. They
That's
just want
right.
more
Look,
resource.
we can say that. There's a lot of optionality in there for us. That's for sure.
And then on mineral or minimal. Obviously, that's the I believe a University of Cambridge spin-out.
That's
This is
right.
I think their first publicly listed partnership. But they were backed by Eco Ventures, the UK impact investment firm, as one of their key deep tech companies for the recent $107 million fund. What is it? Because I'm trying to think of the words. There's so many artificial intelligent startups working in this space because obviously the opportunity is massive. But what is it that they bring to the table which is different to the other AI startups out there?
Yeah, okay, interesting question. And I should say, I'm an exploration geologist, which is, I'm from an industry that's famously analog. We like stuff that we can hold in our hands
Paper
and
and pencils
certificates
and yeah.
and rocks and et
Where's my
cetera, et cetera.
protractor? Yeah.
What I really like about Minimal, as you say, it is an AI platform, but specifically from the Earth Sciences Geology Department of Cambridge University. So, they are earth scientists, and this is a platform that's been built specifically around the minerals industry. For me, as with any AI, my understanding is that, the quality of the data that you feed into these platforms directly correlates to the data that you feed out. Feed in rubbish and you'll get rubbish out the other side.
Clearly, yeah.
With using Minimal's platform to aid us in our kind of our portfolio creation, if we're looking for a capital efficient way to hone in on target areas for us to follow up on, this platform will process unbelievable amounts of data lightning fast. I've operated in the southwest of the UK where, we've had, teams of people dedicated to digitizing historical archives and standardizing it and building it into a database. In Ontario, all exploration data, production data is standardized and publicized. You can go and find all the NI 43-101 reports, all the logging codes
It's all right
are
there.
standard. There is a huge amount of publicly available information that we can feed into Minimal, and in lightning fast can generate some areas of interest for us. So that for me is the real value, is a really capital efficient way for us to process huge amounts of data. And part of the deal that we've done with them is that we've agreed exclusivity on the what's called the Wabagoon sub-province of Ontario, which is one of the kind of the subterranes of the Superior province that is, world famous for its gold production. So, I'm really excited to see the output on this. Now that we're live and we're running, I'm quite sure that this is going to generate some areas of interest for us.
So Minimal will not get a cut of the Eagle Lake situation, because you already have that as a project, if you like.
Yeah, that's right. So the partnership's doing two things. It's yeah, as you say, it, they are working with us on Eagle Lake, but they have no, kind of ongoing interest in the project. Yeah, but yeah, that's where the partnership comes in. They'll be running our data through their platform, and the more data that we produce, we can feed it in, and we can help them kind of rationalize what the model is doing. Outside of Eagle Lake, if their platform comes up with some targets that we do follow up on and do ultimately become a project that moves towards a resource, they'll get a 25% free carry in that. But for all parties, it's only upside. And I
Yeah,
think
and
there's a real first mover advantage opportunity in there for us.
so your intention is that you will have boots on the ground and actually staking stuff that they find? Is that what the plan is?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first step is just to see what the model comes out with in the first instance. But as I say, that in itself is going to be a really exciting exercise. And again, we can ground truth it with stuff that we're doing on Eagle Lake, which I think is going to be valuable for both parties.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a geology question now, and so you can
Uh-oh.
tell everybody. We hear this green belt chucked about quite
Okay.
regularly, and obviously it's in Ontario and mainly in Canada. Maybe it's in other parts of the world as well. Why green belt, and why is there seems to be a propensity to go for gold in these green belt situations?
Sure. So yeah, so Archean lode, greenstone belt, gold, whatever you call it, the name comes from it's an alteration mineral assemblage. Sorry to get a little bit too technical. That is green. So you have rocks that are altered to a green color. That's why they're called greenstones. It's not just limited to Canada. There are greenstone belts in South Africa. They're all over the world, so, but they are analogous to each other in terms of their mineralogy, their kind of their system dynamics. So actually, when you are in an Archean greenstone belt, you can be pretty sure what you're looking at, from using other analogies around the world. Yeah, the other side of it is they have produced an awful lot of gold. And they are demonstrably producing a lot of gold in the future as well. So the fact that they are very well understood, we are building from a really strong platform in terms of the kind of the terrain understanding. They're a really good place to operate in.
And how far away is the sort of, I remember watching a sort of a throwback thing about Hemlo and the Hemlo Gold Rush, if you like. How far away are you from that? I mean, are we like hundreds and hundreds of miles, but ultimately it's the same green belt or it's different green belts?
I mean, it's all part of the Superior Province, isn't it? But I mean, there are different kind of sub-provinces within that. We're in the Wabagoon. Off the top of my head, I forget what the name of the particular sub-province therein is. But yeah, it's still within Ontario, right? So yeah, really analogous style of mineralization.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, from my perspective, I'm looking at this now. People are saying, well, it's only exploration, but ultimately the ounce of gold in these areas has got to be worth $50 to $100 just to identify it, with gold at around $4,000 an ounce, because there's such huge margins in it at the minute. So to find something of sensible size, obviously is going to be very financially good for talent.
Yeah, and look, ultimately, the team has been around the block. And certainly the wider team has built gold projects from early stage exploration all the way into producing mines. Although the gold price is really high now, and we're very bullish that the underlying fundamentals are strong, and the market may be cyclical as they always are, but there is this kind of new normal, as they call it, in the pricing for gold. What you never want to do is to build a mine that only works at kind of really elevated gold prices. The AISC, the all-in sustaining cost of gold mining, you still want to be making sure that you're building projects that have that really strong margin in there, and we're cognizant of that going forward. But again, that's where the beauty of these really well understood geological terrains comes from, is that they are analogous worldwide in terms of the cost of producing from them.
Yeah.
That's all right. I've only got a couple more, to be honest, because but are we
Well,
talking?
when you say I'm my last question, I know that's not your last question, but
We
anyway.
tend to have hundreds, but I think ultimately, there's a couple more. So the first is, you were talking analogous like 5 seconds ago. Goliath is what, 45 kilometers away? Is there a geological connection to Eagle Lake specifically? Are there structural reasons to think the same system runs through your ground, or is that too early to call yet?
I mean, look, I don't want to be making any kind of crystal ball claims about what we may or may not find when we start drilling this. But what we can say is, the major structural trends in this part of the world are running northeast, southwest. Goliath is northeast of us. And if you look at the claim ownership of the other players in the Dryden area, you can see that they're tying up the claims along these northeast southwest structural corridors. So it could easily be argued that we are on trend with Goliath, and demonstrably the system is sheared, and it has structurally hosted gold and is mineralized. So we've got an awful lot of positive indications.
Now that's a wonderful political
I was
answer,
going to
Lewis.
say, don't say it's the same.
No. Well, I think it's yeah. I mean, and you don't need to find another Goliath. You'd be quite happy to, find a David, maybe. But let's see. Okay, and then final one from me. Okay, 2,000 meters of drilling, all funded. Great. What would success look like? And I don't want to pigeonhole you here, but what are you hoping? Because it is only an initial campaign, so we're not going to pin you
It is.
down and say, find a bloody Javier on day one. But what are we hoping for in this first campaign? What are you looking to see?
I mean, obviously, there's a number of things that we want to do with this first drilling. I mean, clearly targeting some of that high grade material and having some drill intercepts. As you've said at the beginning of this call, having high grade material in grab samples is one thing, but having it in drill intercepts and chasing these structures down at depth is going to have inherently a lot more value for us and for our shareholders than the grab samples. So that's clearly going to be priority number one. Again, tying up a coherent exploration target. At the moment, we've got some isolated blobs of sampling at surface in that kind of southwest kilometer of strike of the property, using the drilling to really tie that into a coherent exploration target with a decent density of data. It's not going to be resource drilling, but a precursor to resource drilling, I think, would be a fair target for us. So I mean, 2,000 meters is a decent amount of discovery drilling for us to do. But you know, it's not. It's yeah, we're not over egging the pudding at this point in time. As I said, you know, this is a team that's been around the block. We are cognizant of what it takes to build and maintain shareholder value at these early stages. And you know, all too often we see operators try to run before they can walk. You know, value is not always, you know, it directly linked to the number of meters drilled. So, you know, part of what we're going to do actually with that 2,000 meters is split that into two 1,000 meter stages so that we can do the first 1,000 meters, step back, rationalize, assay, you know, log the cores, and then that second 1,000 meters is you know, we're building with a much greater understanding of what the deposit's doing, rather than targeting straight out of the gate from some surface samples.
Oh, so you're going to find a tier one deposit in your first hole. That's what I heard. Excellent. Right. Let's, but no.
Alex, what I would say is, in terms of what you've said and the importance of minimal and the obviously earth science guys from Cambridge University, I presume having some sort of target that they find would also be good in the first few months.
I mean, like I say, you know, on Eagle Lake, you know, they will be using their platform to generate some targets at depth for us to test. You know, what I won't be doing, you know, as I said, you know, the mineral industry is famously analog. This machine learning tool is in its infancy. It's a tool in the chest. It's not going to be the be all and end all. We won't be mobilizing drill rigs just simply on the fact that, you know, the platform says there's a target to be intercepted. But as I say, in that partnership, you know, by feeding in any data that we do get, and that's not just the drilling, it's all the trenching and the structural information that the guys in the field are going to be getting in the coming weeks and months, and then really using that to hone in partnership with Minimal on some drill targets. You know, that's something I'm really excited about.
I've got Dora the Explorer there with X marks the spot. You know, they come up with a big X and you're in there. Dig a hole.
That's it. That's it.
But I
Yeah,
mean, at
what's
the end of the day,
life?
if they find good targets, you're gonna go and do some surface sampling and trenching probably at those targets. It would
Yeah,
make sense, you know,
absolutely, absolutely.
to see if what they're saying actually makes any financial sense.
And yeah, I guarantee you this: the moment at which Minimal generate a target that is tested and is verified, the market will sit up and take note. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, any more questions, Charles?
No, that's it. I'm that was good interview, solid answers, and we
Yeah.
are watching with interest.
So, Alex,
Thank you for having me, guys.
we have to ask you the roast questions now, I'm afraid. So the first question is the Sunday roast in the King household, what is it?
The Sunday roast in the King household. Sorry, you're going to have to ask me that with a bit more context.
Well, what is it? Is it lamb? Is it chicken? Is it beef? Is it
Ah. Sorry, I went immediately to coffee roasts. My apologies. Oh,
okay.
so look, I mean, look, lamb would be my choice, but you know, I'm in a house with two small children where chicken is king. So I'm
Wow.
limited. I'm limited in my optionality.
And there's still a nugget version, unfortunately, in these days as well, probably.
No, I think we managed to push the boundaries a little bit, but probably not as far as I'd hope.
Okay, so are you a northern boy or a southern boy? Lashings of gravy, you know, are we gonna have the Yorkshire pudding with the lamb? Are we having mint sauce? You know,
Absolutely.
all these things are very important.
I mean, when it comes to our Sunday roast, we're incredibly bohemian. My wife is from the north. I'm very much from the south. So it's a melting pot of condiments and Yorkshire's with every roast, regardless of what protein we're going for.
Very good, very good.
And
Okay,
yeah,
and
without a shadow of doubt, lashings of gravy, 100%.
lashings of gravy is right, especially inside that Yorkshire pudding, just to make it soggy enough to eat. Okay, so our final question is, what is the best advice you've ever received?
Oh, that's a big question. In the context of this conversation, the best advice I ever received was from one of my tutors at university when I was leaving and, you know, going into the exploration industry. And the best piece of advice that I was given was just simply trust your gut. Simple as that. You know, whichever element of the industry, you know, in exploration or whatever, your gut is generally right. So that was, yeah, that's a message that I've carried forward throughout my career, and it hasn't failed me yet.
Okay, and what is the best piece of advice you've ever given to somebody? It's a more difficult one.
Oh, that's an even deeper one. Generally, I would say probably echoing that same message to people that work for me in junior roles. So hopefully that's something they've carried forward too. I generally, you know, for a geologist in the exploration industry, I couldn't give any better advice than that.
Yeah, it's very good. Trust your gut. So, you know, your gut tells you something good or bad in many situations. And when we ignore it, it does tend to cause us problems.
That's right.
Okay, Alex, we look forward to following the story over the coming months and years. I mean, and anyone who's interested, look up Talon Resources. Just as a footnote, Talon is obviously Talon comes from where? Is it the talons on the eagle, or is it something else?
I believe it. I mean, certainly the artwork would suggest the talons of the eagle. Eagle Lake, by its very definition, there are eagles everywhere. It's a beautiful place. Beautiful place.
Very good. We look forward to coming and see it one day.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me, guys.
So welcome our second guest today on the Sunday Roast. Welcome back, Michael. How's things going?
Oh, just excellent. Thank you.
Good. Are you hot and sweaty in London, or are you
Absolutely.
somewhere else?
It's steaming here. I'm ready to go somewhere.
Very good. So, bring us up to date, basically, with Delta Gold Technologies. I mean, we've just been having a chat, and you're just back from Bern in Switzerland with Professor Ritter and the conference that he's been chairing. So yeah, give us an overview of where we're at, and then we'll touch on some of the other things, such as what Mr. Trump's doing in America, and also, you know, the general technical situation behind this qubit, because it's not settled, and that is one of think of the big advantages of Delta Gold, that you have this opportunity to technically go a different route, if you like.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the Bern conference I just came from yesterday, Harry Ruta, our principal investigator, was the chair of the Global Conference on Quantum Computing. It was a very technical conference. There were scientists there from all over the world talking about all kinds of things quantum. And, you know, it's the only conference I've been to where the letter epsilon gets mentioned more than A and B. You know, it was just so technical. I mean, there was just formulas as, you know, long as your arm, talked about as if they were, you know, child's play. So it was interesting to be there. I'm trying to learn as much as I can, obviously. But the conference really confirmed that we're on the right track, that fundamentally the science behind a qubit is not settled. Whether it's trapped ion, neutral atom, Mariana, superconductors, semiconductors, there are many different ways to potentially form a qubit. And it's still at debate. That's definitely true as of yesterday, with the top scientists. And I think the key message for Delta shareholders is that we're doing exactly what we said we would do. And this is very important as a company to march our business forward. You know, we said that we would go out and establish valuable IP. We did that. We said that we would protect that IP with patents. We filed three in our first 6 months. I mean, I really think that's the thing to take away, right? Is that we came with some original ideas with Penn State and with the University of Toronto, and we filed patent protection with both universities in our first 6 months. I mean, that's really something to think about very carefully. And it really confirms that at the university level, there's a strong belief that we're onto something that's worth protecting. So I think those are the key messages.
Purely from a financial perspective, these patents are, I know you can't tell me details, but I'm going to ask questions anyway because that's what I do,
Go ahead.
obviously.
Sure.
From the point of view of these patents, you know, we talked previously about a small switch to do with quantum computing that came out of Cambridge that was worth $1 billion. You know, are these patents as like the whole game, or are we talking about very specific things in these patents that have been issued? We don't need to know what they actually are, but
Yeah, I understand.
are these the overarching patents, or, you know, is there something very specific that we think, well, that works, we're going to patent that?
That's a very complicated question, actually. I have to think very carefully about how to answer it. So, yes, certainly in terms of the University of Toronto provisional, the idea of a provisional patent application is you put a pin in the date. That's the key thing of a provisional. And what you try and do is stake out a large area where you have the fundamentals of your idea. You still need a eureka moment like you do in a full patent application, but a provisional is fairly general and it really just establishes a date of your work. You have 18 months to file a specific. And as someone described it to me once, what you're trying to do then with the specifics is put enough tank traps down of specific patents that if you try and get into the larger zone of the provisional, you're going to run into one of the specifics. So that's a way of sort of visualizing the difference between provisional and specifics. So at University of Toronto, we're staking out a pretty large area, which will hopefully have follow-on specifics, which we're working on very hard in the laboratory with a whole team of people. In the case
is that about using the nanostate of gold in quantum computing?
Yes, but in a different way than and gold and other materials. The other materials are quite important. It's about a specific approach to creating a qubit, slightly different than at Penn State. And Penn State had done some background work using nano clusters of gold. And there's actually a published paper about that. Interestingly, supported by the U.S. Air Force, actually funded part of that work in the background paper. And at Penn State, we're further along in that we've filed three specific patents. So we went directly to specifics because of the specific techniques and results that we're achieving there. So we have both things going on, and both are continuing with their work. And one of the next steps is really the collaboration between the two universities, which we're very excited to sponsor.
So if we get one out of three in Penn State, then we've got $1 billion. Is that what you're telling me?
You know, I can't say that.
No, you can't. I can, which is good fun. There's lots of stuff that's come out with the executive orders. But I'm going to leave that to Charles. Okay, so go for it, Charles.
Yeah, before we do that, I want to take a little step back because there's a few people, I've put out a few articles on Delta Gold. And basically, the key question keeps coming back, which is, and I'm going to try and explain it in my own words, what you're doing differently. And you can either correct me or say, congratulations, you're right. Okay, so.
Or I won't say anything at all because I can't.
No, indeed. But the primary bottleneck in quantum computing is qubit instability, right? Decoherence. Okay. And that's caused by environmental.
Well, let's stop there. There's two problems, right? Decoherence, number one, or stability, fidelity. That's problem number one. Problem number two, which is very important, is scalability. So, for example, in trapped ion is one of the more popular methods of creating a qubit. And they're actually trapping an ion within a field. So a single ion trapped, they can hold onto it and they can work with it. Now, that's great, except in order to get millions of qubits, you need to trap millions of ions or a lot of ions.
And you can't scale it.
And it's very tricky to scale that. So there's the two problems, fidelity or decoherence, and also scalability.
Yes. And so the idea is induced superconductivity. So unique atomic surface state properties of nanoscale gold can host superconductivity. And as you say, scaling, because the gold nanoclusters can be chemically synthesized in massive quantities, you can create high volume platforms.
You're doing pretty well here, Charles.
Okay. So right.
I think you've had help. You did a photo friend. I think you did.
I'm right next door to the University of Exeter, and I'm more and more, you spend your time emailing people, look, it's me again, I need some help. Tell me, is this nonsense or not? And they go, that sounds like it works. But ultimately, right, the other thing is, and this is the key thing I keep coming back to. So the traditional way of sorting out superconducting qubits, right, is temperature. So you're looking at it colder than basically deep space to stay stable. But not only you can scale it, can you bypass the temperature, as in the cooling requirements? Is that something you might be able to do?
Great, great question. And, listen, if we solved the problem of fidelity and scalability and we still had to be at 0.4 of a degree Kelvin, everybody would still be very happy. But definitely the temperature is related to decoherence and stability, right? I mean, the idea to go so cold is to eliminate all outside influences, right? So it doesn't knock the qubit off its perch, right? Any outside energy, the thing falls apart, right? And so definitely the more stable you are fundamentally, the more likely you are to be able to come up in temperature because it's just more robust in terms of its stability. So those two things are kind of related, as I understand.
Yeah, and then the other question I have before we move on to, you know, Trump and what he's going on with is, like, gold as itself is not a superconductor, right? At the nanoscale.
Very good.
No, okay.
But you're doing so well. I'm so impressed.
But
it's taken me quite a while to learn all this, actually.
Well, I don't know. To be fair, I mean, I'm not an expert on any level at all. But at the nanoscale, the argument you're making, okay, so you're saying that at surface properties, it can host induced superconductivity. But the key point is, right, that surely that has to be alongside other advanced materials. It can't just be gold. So what advanced material? Now, you may not be able to answer this, but what advanced
I think it's laughter is telling you that it cannot answer it, doesn't it?
No, but that's the special sauce, right? Ultimately.
I refuse to answer on the basis of incriminating myself.
Okay, fair enough. Right, let's move on.
You have to add the Tabasco to the gold in nano state, and then
I take the fifth.
You've got a special sauce.
Well, we're in the UK. The fifth doesn't exist. But moving on. look, I think ultimately the
and you're Canadian. So what are you talking about?
but the idea is, like, ultimately, even if, like, you don't have to crack quantum computing by yourself, ultimately you just need to have something which is, you know, evidence that you have a new approach. That's all that you need, right? And when you've got companies like the majors, the Mag 7, pouring billions and billions and billions into this, when they look at those patents and assuming they get granted, they're going to look at it and go, you know, what's the cost of not owning this? That's actually the real investment case, right?
I mean, yes. And not only that, we think we might go quite a long way with this. You know, the best value for shareholders is driving forward, right? And I've described it as, you know, they're down certain hallways of specific physics methods of doing it. We're opening a new hallway, right? And as you point out, we don't have to open all the doors at the end of the hallway. We just have to have a set of keys and go, we're going down the hallway with the keys. What if the door's open? You know, that's all we got to do, right?
Do you want the keys yourself, or does someone want to buy the keys from you, or do they want to risk you opening a door without them holding
that? You got it. That's the story.
So moving on, right? Okay, so the person potentially holding your hand may not even be a major, could be the U.S. government. I won't ask you to speculate, but we will talk about the very recent executive orders. So signed a few days ago. First was ushering in the new frontier of quantum innovation, and the second was a companion order, securing the nation against advanced cryptographic attacks. Now, ultimately, if you or anybody else figures out a way to solve the quantum scaling problem and we build a quantum computer, the entire internet is, I don't think there's a better way to put this, doomed, right? If we haven't got to post-quantum cryptography by that point.
Or method, and actually this was part of the conference in Bern that was quite interesting, and part of it I could understand better than the real physics, was the idea that you essentially set up protocols for quantum computers to protect themselves from quantum computers. So, you know, I think that it's not necessarily doomed if we establish the protocol that you use the power of the quantum computer to fight off a quantum computer. You can't send a poor little, you know, basic laptop up against a quantum computer. That's not going to work, right?
No,
it's a quantum computer. It might have a clever way of being in quantum space, able to talk to another quantum computer securely. That may be possible.
But okay, right. I'll rephrase. I know it sounds science fiction almost, but when the atom bomb came along, it ended World War II, right? The first person to have a quantum computer, how much power do they have?
Yeah, an enormous amount. There's no doubt about it. And that's why it's of interest to governments. And that's why the national security aspect of what we're doing is something we're very aware of, and why specifically we've targeted three countries, which we believe are highly aligned for our work, which is Canada, the United States, and the UK. And I think that's where we keep the work. And we do have plans to engage properly at senior level with government. We've already started here in the UK, actually, to ensure that they know who we are, what we're doing, and that that we're protected from bad actors. That will be a thing that, as we develop here, we'll be more and more conscious of.
Yeah, and ultimately, I mean, that federal framework, that traces back to 2018, that National Quantum Initiative Act, and then obviously Biden I mean, this is kind of important. The Biden administration, they put through National Security Memorandum 10, I believe. So this is the other thing is this is bipartisan. You've
Absolutely.
got midterms coming up. It's not Trump. It's one of the few issues across the entire political spectrum.
That
Everybody
and
is
critical
against it.
minerals, that and critical
Yes,
minerals are the two
indeed.
things that there's absolutely universal bipartisan agreement
And
on. And the left and the
ironically,
right in both in all countries, actually, in the three countries we've talked about, that's universal.
indeed. And I mean, it's interesting because I try not to push the Guardian metal connection too much, but it's interesting that that tungsten asset Pilot Mountain, which I said would get government funding back in 2023, it did do so, and then now you have the Trump administration pushing forward, taking equity stakes in quantum computing companies, pushing forward. Effectively, the amount of focus going into quantum, it's kind of like, okay, because the way I see it, right, is that basically when you're talking about artificial intelligence and quantum computing, there's two bottlenecks. And the one at the very bottom is critical minerals and the ability to secure domestic supply. And the one at the very top is, quantum computing, and then also, the other technologies at the top. And those are the bottlenecks that you're kind of fighting for. And interestingly, China had control of the critical minerals and the US had control of the technology. And now, what's happening right now? Well, the US is trying to get control of the minerals while maintaining their advantage in tech, and China is trying to do the reverse. And it'll be very interesting to see, but $2 billion investment, how much of that could flow to Delta Gold? Well, it doesn't need to be particularly much to be a very interesting change of investment thesis, right?
Well, and there's a fascinating thing, Charles, in that the original work, the background work at Penn State was funded by the U.S. Air Force. And for Guardian, I've been reporting every month to the U.S. Air Force. So, it's not a coincidence that the government is interested in these things. They're hugely important. They're not totally in the public domain yet. I mean, I think people are generally aware about critical minerals because it's been in the news, recently, Greenland and all of that. And quantum computing, again, it's kind of generally of note, but I don't think people understand the scale of the efforts on both, and how important both of these issues actually are. I think it's underplayed. It's certainly in the investment community. It's kind of, oh, yeah, I know about that. But I don't think people actually get it. And hopefully, in quantum, the $2 billion investment is a headline that people start to raise their eyebrows and say, actually, this is a business that I need to pay attention to. I think we're way behind the curve in that.
Yeah, but Michael, I'm sure that when you go into the US Air Force, you're not going to be talking to them about Delta Gold Technologies when you've already got a grant from GMET. That would be rude.
Well, we have to report to the US government about Delta because of what we're doing. So I've actually been told that I need to by our public relations firm at a very senior level in Washington, we need to go and report in before we get too far here. So it is a make sure you go and make report with those that are in charge.
Those that make the decisions. I'm going to take you back to Bern here in Switzerland. Obviously, an incredible good networking opportunity for you for educational establishments. You mentioned Canada, the US, the UK. We don't have a UK university yet.
Yeah, well, we're working on it, and it's not a matter of forming any partnership. What we're looking for is quite technically specific, actually. We want to have a UK relationship with a top university. We also want the work to be synergistic with what we're doing. So there's actually a collaboration across universities here where we think there's a lot of power in that, and the academics agree and are actually very excited about it. It's a matter of having the right tools and the right kit that is synergistic. It's quite a technical thing. We've been working hard on it for over a year now, and even before we were public. Yeah, can't say any more. We've delivered on everything else we've said we're done. Just stay tuned.
Okay, very good. Okay, well, and I know you had lunch with Mr. Jonathan Swan and yourself and Jamie on the management team, which by all accounts he was counting how many gin glasses there were. So I hope you enjoyed that and didn't give anything away that you haven't given away today. But
No,
yeah, I think the
we're
one
very
thing.
careful about that, actually. I've got some experience having worked on building a diamond mine in Canada, and I know when things have a national security implication. I understand that very well.
But I think the thing that people also need to understand is that Delta Gold Technologies, I mean, the setup of your shareholder base now, with not just Jonathan Swan holding 20-odd%, but you now have some pretty serious institutions on board, as well as obviously a lot of skin in the game with the management. What would you what they say?
Well, I think this is formational to the company, right? And I've said this over and over again. It's not about getting the money. We could go raise money with the track record of the group. That's not a problem. It's about getting the right money. And what I mean by that is the shareholders that understand the mission, understand the vision, understand what we're going to do here. And from this point in the company's development, I describe it as turning ratchets. So what I mean by that is that now that we're established and we have some presence and a good group of public shareholders, the objective is to ratchet up the level of the shareholders that we have into international institutions that actually work in this space, and to just steadily move capital markets position and fundamental business position. That's why I describe it as ratchets. It's like one, then the other, one, then the other. And that's how you ratchet your way from a 100 million pound company to a 500 million pound company and beyond. You have to take deliberate steps to actually grow the business with the right partners quite carefully, but you're determined on it, and you just focus on that, moving each piece ahead successfully. So that's what we're doing. We're moving now into that part of corporate development, and I've done this before. So it's a way of thinking about it that you just set up the milestones and the markers, and you just steadily improve your capital markets relationships, move upscale in the market, add to your shareholder base, add to your exposure and your retail following carefully, but more broadly. And then you put the corporate development behind that that shows the value that goes with that. And then you start all over again. You increase the exposure, increase the quality of shareholders, increase the business profile, and so on. And it's like moving a set of ratchets. That's the way I think about it.
So on that note, do you see interest coming from the US in what you're doing, as in investment interest? I mean, people thinking, I want to buy some of this.
Well, we haven't seen any trading on the OTC really to speak of, a little bit. We saw some, we got a listing. You always just get a listing automatically in the German exchange. We saw some interest come in from Germany, which was interesting. I think, no, the short answer is no. We've actually got some work to do there. That's a next capital markets thing that we have to do. And I've worked with a very senior firm, Edelman, and they actually did some work for GMET as well. They're one of the largest PR firms in the world. They usually work with Fortune 500 companies, but I've had a 25-year relationship there. And so I think working with them to increase our general exposure across the US market will be very helpful. And also, I think it will elevate our profile to the institutional horizon. And that's where we can start to get some institutional investment from the US. And we're certainly well positioned for that. I mean, we could put our scientists up against any tech analyst in any one of the big investment banks, and they would be impressed. I'm 100% sure.
Charles, last question.
Last question, sure. That's good. I've got a million questions, and we could be on here forever.
Okay, go for it then.
But no, it's
Sip a
fine.
coffee then, Charles. I'm, you know,
Let's
I'll sit down.
have this one, right? Okay, so basically, what you're going after is solving, or at least partially solving, the quantum scaling problem, right? Which basically means if you could do that, you're well on the way to building a quantum computer. Do you think there is a risk? So, for example, very recently, the US government effectively banned Claude's most advanced models from being used. And then when they come back, it'll almost certainly be more guardrails, right? Now, do you think there's a risk that the government, we will be monitoring Penn State and any other university for tech advances, as they're going to, you know, anything from, you know, a light ban to you can't sell to these people, all the way up to the Invention Secrecy Act, you know, and you can't talk about it at all. How do you navigate those things, particularly given that you're publicly listed? And obviously, this is
Again,
a future problem.
Charles, absolutely excellent question. There's many things I could talk about there. You know, that your question is exactly why we look to work synergistically with government from the very beginning, right? So I think, you know, one of the principles here is, you know, are you a good actor? Do you actually understand the nature of what's happening here? And are you in a position to put the technology protected in the right place? And are you willing to do so? I mean, let's face it. It's and we've said that from the very beginning, and we've been very consistent about that carefully because we are that way, and we want to make sure the government knows that. And so, that's one of the reasons that we are going to develop that relationship very closely here as a core member of our stakeholders, right? There's our shareholders, there are governments that are other stakeholders, and we need to, just like, in any business, you need to bring all of your stakeholders along, and that they can see the positive development. And if you look at the history of other businesses, when the government makes an investment, if that multiplies into private industry investment, and there's the right acknowledgement of the importance of the business from a national security and national economic point of view, then you go forward. If we're seen to be a bad actor, then all of the things that you talked about, could come to pass. But I think that there's been a very good history of recognizing the synergy of capital markets and the natural development of business, with the right framing. So it's setting that framing in place at the beginning that's very important, and we're very aware of that.
And then my final question from me. I know I said that was my final one, but I have one more. You're in a war. I know we're laughing and joking a little bit, but the race for, nuclear fusion or quantum computing or advanced technologies, advanced material science, we're in a war. And China, India, Russia, anybody, where it's a neutral, an ally, or an enemy, they're all doing everything they can to win. Does that not feel a little bit stressful sometimes when you step back a little bit?
Yes.
Good. It should do.
How's that
That's an excellent answer.
for
Yeah.
an answer?
But yeah, I mean, the other thing is, if you actually do crack it, you'll have to. It's kind of like when a junior goes exploring for gold and then it finds like a massive nugget, right? And then you realize you've done it. If the patents get registered, and then you suddenly realize actually, the way we're doing this is going to be the way forward. You've invented the DVD when everyone uses the video before.
Well, and listen, that your points are well taken, Charles. Again, that we are going to war, and when you go to war, you need the best weapons on your side, and that's why we've hired Hayes and Boone as our patent agents in the U.S. And that they have filed 19,000 patents out of that office, and they do the patents for NVIDIA. Now, they're not cheap, right? But they have to be, if not the top, one of the top patent lawyers, and certainly high tech patent lawyers in the world, right? So, and let's make sure we keep that in perspective too. I mean, yes, we're going to work on our patents with the absolute top people, but at the same time, a patent is just a, as somebody explained it to me once, it's just a roadblock, right? It's not a wall, it's a roadblock, and people will find ways around and over and whatever your roadblock eventually. So the only way to really have innovation protection is to be innovating all the time, because you have the most knowledge about what you've patented. Therefore, you can develop the best forward, right? So that's why I say the strategy is always to be developing forward all the time, right? And you've got to be innovating all the time. You can't just rest on your patents. That's not how it works. But I think to have the best patents possible from the very beginning, we've thought of that. That's definitely, as you said, we're going to war. We have to arm up right when we start, not down the road.
I mean, to be fair, Haynes Boone, I think the basic thing, the simple thing is it easier to buy you out, or to try and go around your patents, right? And that's why you have, I don't want to say attack dog, but that's almost exactly what you need to protect yourself. Kev,
Correct.
anything else? Or I think with it, we're done.
Yeah, I have two questions, Michael, and then we're finished. The first one is,
Both of you have two last questions. Yeah,
well, Charles has about
okay.
23 last questions normally, so
Carry
I and mine are nothing to do with Delta Gold anyway. The first one is, are you a Canadian football supporter these last few weeks?
I
We
was
couldn't care
actually
less.
in. I was coming out of a dinner meeting as Switzerland beat Canada, and heard the hoots all over Bern, much to my chagrin. So I didn't actually watch the game. I was at a dinner meeting with Professor Ruda, and we came out to walk the streets and heard all of Switzerland celebrate. We knew that wasn't good.
But you've still qualified, I think, no?
I believe so, yes. Yeah,
You're
I haven't
still
had time to
qualified for the
follow it, to
last
be honest.
32.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, and my final, and it is my final question, unless you make me ask you another question because of the answer. Michael Jones, what drives you? Because you could be sitting with your feet up, I'm sure,
Well, I have said
having a drink, chilling out.
I have set a retirement date, Kevin. I have.
And what is that, the day you die
2060,
or?
2066. I'm not working past 2066. I'm telling everybody right
Okay,
now.
40
I'm not
years.
doing
So
it.
you'll
Yeah.
be, how old will you be then? 105 or 103?
103, and I'm not working past that. That's it. Everybody needs to be aware. If you've got plans of holding the stock beyond 2066, I won't be running it. Just so
Well,
you
my great grandmother lived
okay,
in
but the
very good
question
health.
is, what drives you?
I mean, come on. I mean, it's in the blood, man. It's like, developing companies is a great thrill. It's to watch a business grow from startup to 100 million to 500 million to a billion is a great pleasure. I mean, it's better than any hobby you can imagine. So it's just a great feeling every day.
But that's what I'm saying. It's not, it's for you now, even though obviously you want a financial benefit from it. It's not about the money. So what is it that drives you in terms
No,
of?
it's that. I just described it. It's the thrill of seeing a business develop and grow. It's it of getting people to collaborate, of watching a vision come to reality. That's better than anything. It's better than money. It's better than hobbies. It's better than, cars or whatever other people are into. They're into those things, that's fine, but I'm not. I like doing this. This is what I like to do.
But if this company was making pencils, would that be the same?
Well, they'd be the best goddamn pencils you've ever seen.
It'd be a quantum technology pencil. Okay, I'll take that as your final answer. And yeah, we end on that note. Thank you, Michael, for your time. It's been a pleasure. We've enjoyed it. Some great questions, I think you'll agree, from Charles. Some
Absolutely.
Norm,
Scarily good
some.
questions, actually, to be perfectly honest. But thanks, Charles.
Yeah, always
Yeah.
happy to ask them.
All
Lovely
right.
chat.
Cheers, guys.
Yeah, all the best.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye bye.
Okay, so as we said at the start of the show, we're not going to spend a lot of time on any stocks really, and maybe more what's coming than anything else. We've got Revali, as I pronounce it, maybe you pronounce it differently, Charles, but it's coming as an IPO next week. Looks like they've raised approximately £2 million was the goal. I think they've achieved that. And a lot of institutional money and money from Italy has come into that, so it should be very tightly held. So yeah, what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think Revale, well, is it Revale as in the clarion call to battle and the wake up call for the military, or is it Reveil as in wake up, se réveil in French? Who knows the pronunciation? We've probably check which one it is. But I think it might be Revale. Now, I think the key thing for me is that London is screaming for uranium plays. People want to invest in uranium. There's Arkor Resources. We spoke to Rory earlier in the week, and I think that's a really good exploration play. Power Metal has exploration out in the Athabasca with ACAM, but ultimately there's very, very little out there, isn't there? And people want a European uranium play. Italy is, Italy's legal and just general public opinion of uranium has shifted very, very quickly, given how high their energy prices have gone. Because of the combination of the Strait closing and Russia squeezing a little bit on the gas side, and they're coming into basically a perfect storm. They're enlisting at the perfect time for uranium, for European uranium.
Yeah. And I mean, the setup of it is also very good. There's basically been no pre-IPO money that is going to be available because it's all with the companies
The parent
or the
companies.
directors.
Yeah.
And so basically, nobody's going to have got stock prior less than 5p. They've also put a warrant in there at 10p if you're still holding your stock. So that's sort of
It's
a
becoming more
sweetener.
popular, that sweetener, isn't it? It's a
Yeah.
smart thing to do.
Yeah, we've had it in Talon and now we're having it in Revale as well. So yeah, I think the if you look at the details, I know you got sent a whole load of information that I don't know whether you read it all or not, but this is an asset that was basically carpetbagged or basically put under the covers because of problems in the nuclear industry. And, you know, literally hundreds of millions, I think, was spent on this in Italy. It's not saying it's going to be a perfect scenario, but my saying on it is I do believe it's going to be worth significantly more than £4 million, which is what's coming to the market with. And £4 million, when you also compare it to Arkle, which I think is now £12 million, and I'm not putting Arkle down because Arkle still looks very cheap. You know, there is a lot of room to move just on the fact that they have a uranium asset.
I think it's also got an Amaroki type touch to it, just because, as you say, you know, I think it was like 250 million is roughly how much it would cost to build these assets back up, right? If you were doing it from scratch, and you know, going in, they're going to be able to do exploration drilling, you know, work on stockpiles that are already there in a way that's a lot cheaper than you'd be able to do elsewhere. And ultimately, you know, Italy is coming back to being, you know, pro-nuclear, as is Germany. You know, Germany shut down all of their nuclear reactors and now suddenly they're changing their tune. It'll be interesting to see. I think, as you say, with any IPO, the key thing is, what does the pre-IPO look like? What does the IPO look like in terms of who's holding the IPO? What's the incentives to hold the stock? You know, is there going to be a sell-off initially? Almost certainly not, because of the way it's been structured. And then all it takes is a little spark, and the investors will flood in because they want to back uranium. It's as simple as that, really. And you know, the other thing is that investors who've backed Zenith will probably look at this and want to be in this play as well. That's the other thing to be aware of, and that's a big loyal investor base. And it doesn't, when your market cap is going to be very small at the very start, it doesn't take particularly much buying to shove it up a little bit. So we shall see.
Yeah, and Ajax are going to have, I think, just over 15% of this. So that's obviously going to help them. There's been a huge seller in Ajax in the last 2 weeks, I think. So if you want to grab yourself a bargain as well, I think grab yourself some Ajax shares, because they're only as low as they are because somebody's basically wanting out. For what reason, we don't know, but it isn't the story anyway. It isn't what they have in the assets. So, you know, they do say that opportunities come along when, especially in the small cap, when some big players are trying to get out. This is a fantastic way in for retail investors in a lot of situations. Not always, but in a lot of situations. I certainly took advantage of it, and we will see whether it was a wise move or not, but I think it will be.
I agree. Yeah, I think it goes. You know, I don't know whether this is Ajax specific or just the market in general, but as we both know, there are plenty of companies raising for IPOs at the moment, right? I mean, the list is growing. It seems every time I feel like the list has stopped, then another one or two adds on. So we might be going back to that phase of the market where, you know, you do have three or four IPOs a month going forward. It might trickle off, but that might happen. And ultimately, to fund all those IPOs, you know, larger investors will be selling what's already on the market initially to fund them, right? Now,
in the main, yes, for sure.
Yes. And why is that partially behind the liquidity crunch of the past week or two? I would say, in addition to the hot weather, that must not be helping. But having new companies...
Well, I don't think we can underestimate the amount of cash that was drained out for SpaceX either.
Oh, that's
true
as well. Yeah, yeah.
It's been in the... probably in the billions from the UK market has gone over to that SpaceX. And the reality is maybe a lot of it has started to come back already, because people have sold, but we will see. Anyway, we'll not talk any longer about all of the other stocks. Hopefully you enjoyed that show. If you did, please hit that subscribe button on YouTube. Or if you're listening to on Audio Boom, on any of the Spotify's, Apple's, you know, just click that button so you know when to get notified for the next podcasts. Next week, we're going to be reviewing all of our stocks of the year. So watch out for that one. And enjoy your barbecues and enjoy the weather.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.